From the Civic Media Radio Network, moving Wisconsin forward one joke at a time. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows. Hello, Wisconsin!
Now, filling in for the new mom, here's Jane Matinere.
Good morning and a very warm welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. So happy to have you along. You can always join us, call or text at 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Carol Kane with me in studio. Calvin is on the board, and as she does every Thursday at this time, it's our public service announcement with Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Good morning, Dr. Lyerly. How are you doing?
So good. I'm so excited to be here with you guys. Woo!
If you have a question for the doctor, you can always text it in or give us a shout out, 844-967-2789. Or if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, you can comment there as well. Yesterday at this same time, Dr. Kristen, we had a segment that I like to call More Words from Men.
Okay.
And this is kind of an opportunity to focus on men checking in on things that they may not necessarily know all that much about.
Okay.
And so I brought up this instance with Charlie Kirk, who is a MAGA, and he's the founder of a MAGA organization called Turning Point USA. He also has a radio program that I think streams somewhere. But he had three of his friends on the other day, and they're all complaining and dumping on Taylor Swift. And Taylor Swift is ruining democracy. She got 4 million young girls to sign up to vote, and it was more like 35,000. And she's ugly, and she has no talent, and gosh, does she even have any eggs left? She's 34. She just turned 34 yesterday. So this led me to give a little ovulation 101 course, Dr. Lyerly, and I would like to make sure that I did it accurately. Okay.
I would first like to point out that the four of us who are on right now, none of us have functional eggs. So we are past our prime, but we are going to talk about eggs because
we have them.
So much to talk about. Yeah. We did at one point, well, except for, Calvin, but we love Calvin and he's here to, keep us on the straight and narrow.
Absolutely.
And to be really, really clear, we love men. I personally created four of them. So this isn't about men. This is about crazy people like social media parasite Charlie Kirk, who obviously is afraid of Taylor Swift, but loves to use her name in order to elevate his profile. So, whatever, Charlie Kirk. We're not even going to give you any oxygen right now because what we're going to do is we're going to talk about eggs and we are going to dispel some information or misinformation and we're going to make sure that people understand a few really critical things. Like, are you ready for point number one?
Let's do it.
We are born with all of our eggs. Women are born with all of our eggs.
We don't make any more as time goes on.
We don't make any more. And actually, we lose most of our eggs before we're even born. We have way more eggs while we are developing. And once, by the time that we are born, most of those eggs have already disappeared. So we're born with about a third of the eggs that we were created with.
What is there a specific, because I don't know. I mean, is there a specific number that we are born with or is everybody different?
Everybody's a little bit different, but it's thousands and thousands.
Tens
of thousands of eggs. We've got a lot of eggs.
Okay. And it was my understanding also, Dr. Lyerly, from what I found, that even by the time you hit puberty, you have fewer eggs than you were born with.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true. We lose eggs throughout our lifetime. So it's not like, suddenly you hit menopause and your eggs are not there. And actually, the eggs are still there. They're just not functional and you're not ovulating. So our ovaries are loaded with these eggs that are in this space where they're not ready to be ovulated. They're just sitting there waiting for the right cues to happen.
Well, okay. And that's that. So when a young girl hits puberty, that's when these things start waking up, right? And going, oh, well, we have a new function we have to do now. And I'm going to look at this bunch of eggs and I'm going to pick five of them that I think are most viable. Isn't your body kind of making these judgments?
One. one egg with a normal menstrual cycle and the way that your complex symphony of hormones work, one egg per month is elevated to the point where it ovulates. Now, obviously, that is not for everybody. There are some people who ovulate two eggs, and there are some people who have a lot of eggs that are in that place where they're ready to ovulate. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is actually a pretty common condition. About 10% of women have it, where the eggs are just, if you look at an ovary with PCOS on ultrasound, it looks like there's just a string of pearls around the outside of the ovary because there are all of these eggs that are just ready to go. So you can certainly ovulate more than one egg at a time, but the standard is one egg a month gets promoted and ovulates.
Well, all I could think of was during the discussion that they were having, and it's like, does she even have any left? What do you think happens to these eggs? Do you think every time a woman has sex, she's losing eggs? Do we just lose them randomly when we're at the store? I had them in my other purse and I left them in the car. I mean, what do they think is happening to these?
Well, when you ovulate and that egg comes off the surface of the ovary, it doesn't go directly into your fallopian tube. Like the way they teach it to us in school, it's like the egg is there and then the tube is there and it just goes right into the tube, like the tube is a vacuum. That's not how it works. You ovulate off your ovary and that egg, it might go into the tube, but it might just fall deep inside your pelvis and just sit there and wait.
Huh.
And wait, what is it waiting for?
Well, if the fallopian tube, which is beautiful, the end of the fallopian tube is all fimbriated and it's like, it's graceful. It's like a ballroom dancer. And it just is like moving around. And if it like stumbles on that egg, it will suck that egg up into the tube. And that's when the process of fertilization can occur. Usually it happens actually in the tube. But if fertilization doesn't happen, if the fallopian tube doesn't pick it up, that egg just gets reabsorbed by your body.
Huh. Okay, my question for you is, because I had no problems talking to my kids about sex and their bodies and stuff like that, but apparently a lot of people do. So what would you say is an age appropriate, what's an appropriate age to sit down with your son, and you said you got four of them, sit down with your son and tell them and explain what goes on in a woman's body so you don't sound like a moron?
Always. You should always be talking about things that are happening with your body and using medically accurate terms and make it part of their vernacular. So like when they go to the bathroom, when your little men go to the bathroom and they are peeing all over the place, you talk about them like aiming their penis into the, you use the right words.
Yeah. Right, right.
And you can joke around too. I think that's all kind of part of it because, you know, there's a lot of discomfort associated with body functions and body parts. But at my house, we talk about everything at the dinner table because we've always talked about that kind of stuff. And that doesn't mean that my sons come to me to ask for like contraception advice or lots of like specific tricky medical questions. They've got sources and people that they can talk to get that accurate information. But they grew up knowing what the parts of their bodies were. And they'll come home from school sometimes and say, I just learned that your liver does this or your kidney does that or whatever, you know, whatever health question, because they grew up with it. And that's always been part of their education.
You know what? Maybe it's because my father was a pharmacist, you know, that, and I worked in the pharmacy and I've been there since I was a little girl. So my dad used to say all the time, listen, go and talk to your pharmacist if you don't feel comfortable talking to your parents. And, you know, I was just really blunt, too, with my kids. I'm just, you know.
Well, and your parents must have addressed things pretty straightforward as well.
My dad did. Yeah. My mom was a little bit more covered.
Squeamish.
Yeah, yeah, squeamish. That's a good way to put it.
If you're just joining us, Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here for our public cervix announcement. If you have a question for the doctor, please text it in at 844-967-2789.
And Carol, I love that you brought it up. And I really love the idea of letting kids lead, letting them tell you what they need to know, and you acknowledging it and answering it in their questions in an age-appropriate way that they can understand. You don't want
right.
to give them too much information
because sure.
that's scary, but trying to answer their questions without shame and without judgment and just with the motivation of them being able to have to make really good decisions for themselves because you've armed them with really good, appropriate information.
Yeah, I mean, I never understood, you know, the whole cloak and dagger business.
About
you know what
sex.
I mean? Yeah, it's just let's just talk about it's a normal function of the human body. Let's just talk about it.
Well, and think about the amount of harm I think it could cause if your child comes to you with a specific question and your first response is, why do you want to know that?
Mm-hmm.
You can really damage.
Yeah.
But I come to you for information.
Right.
You know, without, mm-hmm. like you said, Dr. Lyerly, without judgment. I want to know this thing. Can you tell me this thing?
Sure.
So you have to be kind of careful how you handle that approach, right?
Oh, for sure. And there's so much misinformation out there and people have such different ideas that are just like not based in reality. I was at a roundtable in Madison over the weekend and it was fascinating. There were 7 pro-choice advocates and 7 pro-life advocates sitting around a table talking about abortion. And I mean, these are people who testify at the Capitol on bills. So like, these are people who are entrenched. And I was the only doctor there. And as we started, it was mediated, so it couldn't get too hot.
Sure.
And as we started talking about, you know, different things that informed our decision-making, it was fascinating to hear some of the things that people believed and that were really making them make these decisions in their lives that once we debunked some of it, they were like, why am I doing this? I'm harming myself because of this belief that I'm holding that's based in fiction.
Are you willing to share more of the details of that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, things like there were some really strongly Catholic folks there. And some of the ideas that they had, like they weren't familiar with some of the genetic things that can happen. You know, it seems very simple, like sperm and egg come together.
And it's all
good.
You've
got a fertilized embryo and it's all good. Like that's life. And it, ideologically, it is. And when you're thinking about your most personal healthcare decisions, you have to be able to make your own decisions about that. But when it comes to making policy for other people, it's a different ballgame.
We will continue this conversation. Stay close. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin across the Civic Media Radio Network. To As Goes Wisconsin. Jane Matnair in for Kristen Bry. Carol Kane with me in studio. Calvin is on the board, and we are joined, as we are every Thursday at this time, by Dr. Kristen Lyerly for our public cervix announcement. Want to do a special shout out to our listeners in Madison listening on WMDX and in Wausau, Bull Falls Radio from WXCO. Good morning, and again, thank you for joining us. So, Dr. Lyerly, we were talking about ovulation 101, essentially, and trying to dispel some misconceptions about the workings of the female body. And right before we went to commercial, you were sharing a round table that you recently had. Tell us more about that.
You said misconceptions. That was funny. So one common thing that people didn't realize is that it is not unusual for fertilization to occur and that fertilized egg not to implant somewhere in the uterus. It just washes out with the normal menstrual cycle. So that really made people think about, well, geez, you know, if life begins at fertilization or conception in their terms, and then that just doesn't implant, then what is that? Like, what does that mean to me? A lot of it was very personal and very ideological, and also rooted in some of the messaging that we get. So, for example, Plan B, a lot of people call that the morning after pill. This is contraception that people, even doctors, get confused about and think causes abortion. Plan B to be very, very clear, is contraception. These are the pills that you take after you've had intercourse, and you are preventing a pregnancy from happening by suppressing ovulation. That is the number one way that it works. So when, as we were talking about things like this, or like the number of abortions that occur late in pregnancy, they had all of these statistics that were just flawed. They were just plain wrong. And they were challenging me on it. And I was like, so this is what the data actually shows. And it was so cool to be in a place where you could talk about things on an even ground.
Yes.
It really made us all think about, like, what are our own closely held beliefs and how do we approach these conversations, knowing that people in society, people we love, have different opinions. And if we aren't having these conversations, we're not learning from each other. So I guess the foundation of it is, whether we're talking about sex or politics or religion, it's okay to have different opinions.
Well, and as Todd Albo likes to say, you're certainly entitled to your own opinion. However, you are not entitled to your own facts.
Yeah.
Speaking of
not entitled to your own facts. Oh, go ahead, Carol. I'll segue you're done.
Where there's like cooperation to me is a positive. I'm just completely thrilled by what you're saying and the fact that they were able to sit around without going to blows at one another and sit down and have a conversation about it, a calm, collected conversation. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall on that one.
One of the pro-life activists actually said to me on the second day, I would love for you to take care of my wife. And he later introduced me to his wife, who, I mean, she was somebody who, when they got married, they went to an abortion clinic on their bus after they left the church, before they went to the reception, to spread what they thought was joy in a place that needed more joy. Now, I don't agree with that. That made me uncomfortable. But in her mind, that was
fine.
The right thing to do. Yeah. But to be able to, you know, get to that point. And a couple of the pro-life activists said to me afterwards, you do not look like what I thought an abortion provider looks like. I always pictured a butcher, you know, an ugly, horrible, dark human being. And I'm like, I'm in this to take care of people. And abortion is a complicated topic that is deeply integrated within women's health care. And that's what I wanted them to know. And I think I was able to get that across.
Which is wonderful. But again, this disturbs me because of this misinformation and of these misunderstandings and people who do not look at the nuances of every pregnancy being different
and being needed to be
handled differently. This is not a black and white issue. There is tons of gray in here, tons.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they are promoting total bans with no exceptions or exceptions for the life of the mother and then not specify how close to dead she has to be before she can get that care is very concerning to me.
Yeah. And like what we saw in Texas this week with Kate Cox.
Yes.
You know, I mean, here she had this desired pregnancy that was just genetically flawed. This baby was not going to survive. So she's heartbroken anyway. And then to have the court say, yeah, sorry. They're literally putting her life at risk,
just
her health, not just her well-being and her sanity, but her life. That's where we're at in this country. More conversations.
More conversations.
Yeah.
Anything else that really cut through with some of the folks that were on this panel?
There were so many topics. We talked a lot about racism. We talked about domestic abuse and violence, how all of this really, it comes together with all of these societal things that are happening. You know, people can't afford healthcare. They can't afford food. They can't get access to good, solid education and the job opportunities that they need. And all of this comes together to create this fabric that is either a strong foundation for people or not so much. And these are ways that we can create policies that inform the way that we live and that help each other out and help us lift each other instead of oppressing each other and creating pockets of people who are doing really well and a lot of people who are just struggling to get by.
And did you talk at all, Dr. Kristen, about the maternal healthcare deserts and just the healthcare deserts we have across Wisconsin and what this means, particularly for women?
Yeah, we did a little bit. We really focused on reproductive health, but you know, we know that most of the doctors who are delivering care, especially in rural areas, they are fearful. They don't have resources. They are not well supported when it comes to women's health care. It's hard to talk about, sometimes even hard to bring up. So if they don't feel supported, and they are the people who are delivering obstetrical care as well as diabetes care and pediatric care, like they're caring for entire communities, if they don't feel comfortable and supported there, they're not going to work there. And that's part of the reason that we're seeing such a dire physician shortage, not just OBGYN doctors, but family medicine doctors, emergency medicine doctors, and other people who are truly committed to taking care of people in a holistic way.
Okay, so where do some of these people that live in these rural areas where there is a doctor depletion, if you will, where can they go to get information?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they're struggling to get any sort of access. They're having to drive, or they're just plain going
without.
Got it.
So,
okay.
You know, they're going without, but we can absolutely, let me check into, I'm glad you asked for resources because I love resources and I am not familiar. We've got DHS here in Wisconsin, but I'm sure we can get a little bit more granular about how people in rural areas can get access. So let's talk about that. Are we on next week?
We are on next week.
Let's do it next week. Let's talk about rural areas and how people can get access to care.
Absolutely will. Dr. Kristen Lierley, thank you so very, very much. Have a wonderful weekend. We will see you next Thursday.
Thanks, Doc. When we return,
J.R. Radcliffe, we're here to talk sports. And I think that tall Bucks player, Mr. Antetokounmpo, his name might come up. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. Stay close. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, welcome, welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. Jane Matinier in for Kristen Bry. Carol Kane is with me in studio. Calvin is on the board. You can always join us at 844-967-2789-844-96-PARTY. We are joined this morning, Journal Sentinel sports reporter J.R. Radcliffe. Good morning, J.R. How are you doing?
Hi, bud. Great. How are you guys doing?
We are excellent. What an incredible day. It feels
it was
like
a fun night.
It feels like April. Yeah, and what an incredible night for the Bucks last night. Giannis Antetokounmpo, nobody like him. What did you think about his performance last night?
Oh my gosh. So, obviously the 64-point performance, biggest single game point total in franchise history, was incredible. Blew Michael Redd out of the water. It was a 17-year-old record. It had been 57 points, so this was quite the achievement for Giannis. The post-game drama is my favorite. Jane, I tell most people the thing that's hardest about parenting is the foolishness that you have to put up with. It's not the sleep. It's not the driving around. It's the foolishness. The things that you don't realize you're going to have to spend a lot of time talking and thinking and discussing about because your kids are just, it just matters to them. But I will tell you that professionally, when there is foolishness, my heart is so full. And when people... When you've got two teams arguing over a game ball and one team not giving it back, like they have an 11 and a 9-year-old at home. I don't know anything about this, but it reminded me of that. Oh my gosh, I was having so much fun following it. It is utter foolishness, and I'm into all of it.
For people who don't know what happened, JR, why don't you explain what happened after last night's Bucks game?
After Giannis scored 64 points to, again, set the Bucks franchise record, he wanted to get possession of the game ball, the actual ball that was used in the game, to commemorate that, either for him, for himself. He kind of mentioned Damian Lillard kind of had a milestone earlier in the game that he mentioned maybe that's what it doesn't matter. He wanted the ball. The Indiana Pacers and the Bucks had gotten into a little bit of a heated exchange earlier in the game. Bobby Portis had gotten ejected. He picked up a couple technicals. Thanasis tried flying off the bench. It was a really hard foul, a flagrant foul against Giannis. So these two teams, the temperature had risen. The two teams were at each other's throats a little bit. And they somehow the Pacers ended up in possession of what at least the Bucks believe was the game ball. and walked it back to their locker room. And Giannis ran back to the locker room to try to retrieve it. Players were in the tunnel. There was words exchanged. Somebody might have gotten a little bit hurt. Not a player, but the general manager of the Pacers might have taken an elbow to the ribs, sort of. So big kerfuffle. Questions about whether or not it was actually the game ball or the reserve ball, which I didn't even realize there was a reserve ball, and various video accounts of what happened. And basically, Giannis was still mad after the game. He believes that the ball that was given to him, he didn't say it quite exactly like this, but he said he didn't know if it was actually a game ball, the game ball. He felt like it was a brand new basketball, that basically the Indiana Pacers still have this game ball and refused to give it to him and tried to placate him with a fake ball. So all of this is, oh man.
Oh, for just, Pete's sakes.
Tremendous content.
I need to clarify something for me, mm-hmm. not being a huge sports fan. Mm. They all look the same, right?
As far as I know, they do all look the same. But Jane, it's the sentimental value of the memorabilia aspect of having that ball. The ball that Giannis threw down on a breakaway dunk to procure his 63rd and 64th point, that's the one that he wanted in his possession.
I just don't understand. I really don't.
I know.
You know, it's what? Give him the damn ball, for Pete's mm-hmm. sakes. You know, he has nobody, 64 points? That's enormous. Do you think, I don't even know if that'll ever be broken, to tell you the truth. But I just give him the ball, for Pete's sakes. It seems like sour apples to
me. Well, the Pacers come off like you said, they come off like nine-year-olds. Nana, nana, boo-boo, we have your toy and we're keeping it. I mean, indeed. That's they should be embarrassed.
And the dust is still settling on this. I think as cooler heads ultimately prevail, it will be revealed that both sides probably got a little more excited about it than needed to be. I mean, Giannis was very heated immediately after, was yelling at Tyrese Halliburton, the Pacers star player who happens to be from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and is having a tremendous season so far, you know, and saying that he's the guy who has to go get the ball. So, again, the temperature had risen. Both sides were very much, you know, like their guards were up, things were much hotter than they needed to be. I think it probably could have been worked out. The Pacers indicated, the head coach Rick Carlisle, after the game, that they wanted the ball to reward it to a player who had scored his first career NBA point in that game for the Indiana Pacers on a free throw. There's some reason to wonder about that he had actually scored a point in a previous game that didn't quite count because the in-season tournament has new rules, so it gets very complicated there very quickly. But long story short, Indiana... It's either a misunderstanding that went too far, or Indiana was being a little bit childish and the Bucks kind of played into it by sort of getting really, really upset really, really fast. This is all going to blow over. This is completely not important. The Bucks are playing a little bit better. Giannis had a tremendous game. That's going to be the lasting impact. But, man, I'm never going to forget this game. This was a wild time.
This is an instance where Carol needs to come in to both of their locker rooms and take two of them by the ears and go into a small room and have a little chat with them. Because is just the height of absurdity. These are grown men making millions and millions and millions of dollars to play with a ball. Go buy a ball. Get over it.
Just sit down, shut up, give him the ball, and you guys go away. You know, I mean, it's very simple to me. It's mm-hmm. it's just ridiculous. So, but anyhow, all right, moving on. What's not so simple is what happened between the Packers and the Chiefs. I mean, seriously, what fell apart? We were on that locomotive of feeling good. We'd won three, and now all of a sudden, just tanked.
Yeah, this game, and they came off that great game against the Chiefs and then against the Giants, a much lesser team, a team that has a rookie quarterback who wasn't drafted and is the toast of the NFL right now, but quite honestly is just not special. Tommy DeVito, I mean, no offense to him, he's having really a nice little run, but the Packers should have been able to contain this no problem. They were able to get to the quarterback, but they couldn't sack him. And that was part of it, but really it was every phase just had an off night. You know, there were a few plays even that probably could have tilted the score anyway. Even as badly as they played, they probably should have still won the game. It's kind of cosmic in a way that they didn't, all the things that went wrong, but the special teams coughing up the ball, the defense just not being able to sack this guy who has been one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL the last few weeks. The offense, Jordan Love just had a really bad first half. They really, really struggled. Just moving the football, calling plays. Like, they kept calling these sweeps play, sweep plays for Jaden Reed that didn't work out. A really weird 2-point conversion call. A lot of things that you question here. And I think Jordan Love had a good second half. Like, I think there's lessons to be learned probably, but this was definitely it was a win on paper, and they didn't convert it. So that's a tough blow for sure.
J.R. Radcliffe is our guest. He's a sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Go ahead, Carol.
No, I was just going to say, too, and can we tell all these people that are ready to jump off the cliff that the defensive coordinator was not fired by Matt LaFleur? He probably will keep his job, right? Oh.
Well, I mean, will he keep his job through the end of the year? I would say, of course, yes, I think so. Will he keep his job beyond this year? I don't know. He's been a lightning rod for really since he started here. He has not had in the NFL any success, really, anywhere he's gone. He's had, I think, a team that finished 20th in a stat that I like to follow called DVOA, which is very complicated. But his defenses are frequently among the bottom third in the NFL. The Packers right now are among the bottom few teams in the NFL in defense. And I think that any numbers that show, even the numbers that suggest that he's okay, passable, I think there's an explanation for them that, the fact that the Packers give up a ton of rushing yards means there aren't a lot of drives. The team's pace is just slower than a lot of other NFL teams. And consequently, even though they don't give up a ton of points or a ton of yards in some cases, they really are struggling on defense, I think. And they've got too many first rounders, too much investment in that defense to be really below average, and they're well below average. So I do think it's a very much a conversation whether or not he's back next year. There are lots of things that went wrong in this game, and he is not the only one, but he is one of the things that you can point to and say there were some things here, especially in this last drive where the Giants scored, that just didn't make a lot of sense the way that they defended it.
Well, and it's always been my understanding, JR, and this goes back to when the Packers finally, after that long drought, won the Super Bowl under Brett Favre that first time. Defense is what wins Super Bowls.
That is the idiom. Offense wins games, defense wins championships. I personally don't think that's 100% true. I think offense is the thing that will
get the points on the board, yeah,
and then win you the championships by default. But I mean, obviously, you need all phases working. You need the special teams too, which isn't as important as offense or defense. But they have the highest paid special teams coach in the NFL, in Rich Bisaccia. He has a great reputation. And the results have not been there. The special teams are still erratic, and they were erratic in this game as well. And the kicking game has not been great this year. The return game has fits and starts where it's pretty impressive. And then, terrible boneheaded plays like what you saw in this game. So there's a lot that needs to be fixed. And I don't know exactly what they're supposed to do. They're still in contention. They can still make the playoffs. But things did not go well in this game, and it is there is a little bit of a track record of things not going well overall.
What about this weekend? What do you see coming with the next matchup?
I mean, they should win like all of the games. The Buccaneers are kind of right there with them, sort of battling for a playoff spot. Not a great team, but they're in position because their division is so weak. So they have a lot to play for. This game will be at Lambeau, so that's a little different. I think they'll bounce back. I mean, the improvement we've seen from Jordan Love is so stark, and even in the Giants game, we saw it from first half to second half. So I think he's going to be fine. I think there are going to be some players that are going to come back from injury that will hopefully augment what they have going on. And Aaron Jones among them, that's going to be a big help. Maybe Quay Walker can get healthy. That's going to help them quite a bit. But they do need to win this game. This is a pretty important game. It could become a tiebreaker issue down the road with the Buccaneers. They have the same record as the Packers right now. So this is a pretty sneaky big game. But I do think the Packers will be all right.
Now, let me ask you, do we need to completely run the rest of the table in order to get into the playoffs?
No. So if they go 4-0 the last four games, they will make the playoffs. That's a sure thing, 100%. If they win 3 of 4, they're probably going to make the playoffs. It's not a guarantee, but it's very, very likely. I would put, 90% probability or better, and pretty much better. If they go 2-2, it's a little less than 50%. I would say it's probably unlikely, I would say. And if it's one win, forget it. It's not happening. So 3-1 will get the job done, and I think that's kind of what I think Packers fans can realistically hope for, that 3-1.
Let's move it on to someone who is doing really well, and it's Badgers volleyball.
Yes.
Right? Final Four?
Oh, so good. Mm-hmm. That's tonight. They'll play Texas, defending national champion Texas. The Badgers are back in the Final Four. They were here a couple years ago. They've been a regular visitor to the Final Four a couple years ago. They won the national championship. So they've become one of the best programs in the nation regularly. They were the top seed again in their regional. They almost at this point almost always get to the regional final, the last step before the Final Four. And this is a big one. Texas, again, like defending national champs, Wisconsin should be probably favored. But these four teams are all very, very good. Pitt and Nebraska on the other side, tremendous teams. And any one of those four teams can win it. So it's a very exciting time for Wisconsin.
It was a really, really good match. I watched some of it on Saturday. That front line for the Badgers, I can't even imagine where those gals find clothing.
Yes. They're so tall.
Yes.
So tall. And, you know, Anna Smrek is 6'9". She's the tallest player
in
Badgers history.
She's 6'9"?
Yes.
6'9", yep. And Tammy Thomas Ilara, who is a transfer from Northwestern. She's also very tall, but I mean, their blocking has been one of their strengths all season. They're a devastating front line. They've always got two people that are basically 6'5" or taller, and that has made them it's been one of their greatest strengths. So yes, I don't know about the shopping situation either, but I know that they're very difficult to get a volleyball around.
I'm telling you, I sit there and I watch these gals, and I'm like, I'm 5'10", and I can't find pants that are long enough.
Well, and I can only imagine for their opponents who are, you know, not 6'9", and maybe even 5'10", going up against someone who's 6'9".
6'9". You know what I want to see? I want to put my husband next to her, because my husband's 5'5¾".
J.R. Radcliffe, thank you so very much for joining us. We will see you in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful Christmas.
Absolutely. You guys as well. We'll see you again between the holidays. We'll see you
All right. Absolutely. And stay close when we return. Odd Christmas traditions. This one involves local fist fights.
Oh,
you're listening
nice.
To As Goes Wisconsin across the Civic Media Radio Network.
On a mission to celebrate, hold it down in the back. While Big Dog and Tim round out the attack, it's the Bucks, talented and tough. What's up? The team from Milwaukee's about to erupt. We got the alley-oops, look away, hyping it up. The Bucks 2000, light it up. Ray Allen,
light it up, light it up.
My man Big Dog,
light it up, light it
Tim
up.
Tim Thomas,
light it up, light it up.
So who's gonna win it?
The Bucks, the
Sam
Bucks.
Castell,
light it up, light it up.
And the Tractor,
light it up, light it up.
Morning and welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. So happy to have you along. Jane Matinair in for Kristen Bride. Carol Kane with me in studio. Calvin running the board. And you can always join us. Call or text at 844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY. This jumped out at me this morning as I was looking around for things. Fist Fighting Festival in Peru, Carol Kane. There are different traditions all over the world, and this one is pretty unique. On Christmas Day in Santo Tomas, Peru, this is an area of the Andes Mountains, so it's pretty remote. It starts off with families going to church,
which
a lot of people do.
Sure.
Later on in the afternoon, it is time for the Takanakui, a series of organized fist fights that they've been doing for years. There are at least a couple of dozen fights on Christmas Day.
Come on.
People who take part include men in their 20s and 30s, also women and teenagers. But before they fight, they have to announce who they're fighting, why they're fighting, and then they have to hug each other.
Well, okay. So, is it a knockout situation? Do we have to...
Every fight lasts between 5 and 10 minutes.
Right.
You cannot hit your opponent while they're on the ground. No weapons are allowed. And if the fight starts going too far in one person's direction, like someone's really getting wailed on, there is a referee. The referee will stop it.
Okay.
If you are older and you can't physically do the fight yourself, you can have a stand-in.
Oh, okay.
And come and fight for you.
So you just gotta, you know, ring somebody's bell, basically, and then hopefully, is there a, what, how, do, I don't know. Listen.
So here's how it started.
Okay.
Well, I just want to conclude, though. So what the person who loses in the fight has to publicly apologize to the entire town, and then both parties have to hug again. So this is one way to resolve disputes. So after all the fights are over, then they have a big feast.
All right.
So they think this goes back to the 1600s. And okay. They're so remote that in order to actually go to a court in Peru to get them to adjudicate whatever dispute this is, if it's a land dispute.
This is easier?
It takes you a week and a half to get there from this place.
So just duke it out, then hug each other.
And we move on.
Breaky, breaky, we're done. Got it.
Get your apology, and life goes on.
Okay.
Not everyone is happy about this. There is resistance towards the Takanakui. The Catholic Church says, really?
Okay.
Really, you got to do this? This is antiquated, barbaric, not helpful, and against the Christmas spirit.
Well, as long,
it's hard to argue with that.
It's hard to argue with that. But I mean, if there's resolution and we can just move on, I guess I guess I don't know.
There is one guy who says it's a way to end the dispute so it doesn't go on year after year.
There you
and
go.
Get more people involved and really disrupt things. So this is, you know, they fight, but they agree that once it's over,
it's done.
The argument is done. And in that regard, it has somewhat of a festive flair.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Well, that's fine. You know, I mean, there's some traditions all over that. I never understood how the tomato thing in Italy happened either. You
Seriously.
Know? Why we're pummeling each other with
tomatoes.
Tomatoes that could be made into a delicious sauce.
Absolutely. What are you wasting all that red sauce
for? I know.
It's terrible. Another big tradition, this is in Japan. Christmas is the busiest time of the year for Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I'm moving to Japan.
Are you a big KFC fan?
Oh my gosh, yes. It's like my favorite. The extra crispy, those mashed potatoes and gravy. Oh, I could just swim in them.
The extra crispy, they should just sell skins.
Oh.
Because that stuff it's chicken crack. Is what it is.
Exactly. And the problem with me was that there was a KFC in Saukville that we used to be able to go to, but now there's not. So the nearest one is like 60th and Good Hope.
Well, you really got to want KFC.
Yeah. So
if you're going to do that.
This
started in 1974 in Japan.
Oh, so relatively recent.
There are a couple of theories about how this all started. One is that a store manager dressed up as Santa and then took chicken to a Japanese school, and the kids liked it, so he started an advertising campaign. Another theory is that Japanese people began buying KFC during the holidays because turkeys were hard to find. Neither of those have been confirmed, but KFC first founded in Japan in 1970, and now it is the hotspot for Christmas meals.
Well, you know, Lou and I have been to Japan. And I mean, literally, I think any excuse just to eat something a little different, because they really do basically eat, it's very much the similar thing every single day.
Like it's rice and fish, I would assume.
Rice and fish. And in the afternoon, you do soba noodles and broth. And then there's the sushi or the tempura, or you get the big hot pots, the bowls, things.
Yep, yep.
But they really, the only like meat that I had when I was in Kobe, and they have
the beef.
Yeah, the beef, and you sit in front of a little hibachi grill and you grill it yourself. So I would say that this maybe is just an excuse
to eat something different.
Something different.
I need some chicken.
No kidding. Oh my gosh, I'm all in.
Well, I'm definitely in favor of KFC. Not so much the fist fighting on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I'm gonna be with you.
That's
on
a tradition they could probably lose.
Because to tell you the truth, I'm gonna lose if I'm in a fist fight.
Coming up tomorrow, we will be joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon at 11:06. So Dr. Mike can fix your life. Greg Bach will be back. We are going to have our holiday treat exchange.
Yep. Yep.
And many, many other exciting and wonderful things.
How many people are involved in this holiday treat exchange?
Just us. It's you and me and Greg and Calvin.
Oh, got it. Okay. I just need to know how many to make.
I told Calvin's mom, six each.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Right? That should
fair
be
enough. That's
right.
Fair enough.
Don't go away. We have the news coming up next, followed by the wonderful Todd Alba program. As always, thank you for listening and calling and texting. Really appreciate it. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Stay here. This is the Civic Media Network.